Welcome to Musically Challenged, your weekly helping of random music conversations based on whatever topic the guys choose. Their goal is to entertain and inform you on a variety of themes. This podcast is an expression of their lifelong love and commitment to music. Simply stated, music is life. This show may include adult themes and language. Once again, welcome to Musically Challenged. Here are your hosts, Chad and Lou.
Alright, so working now?
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome to episode 47 of Musically Challenged, your weekly helping of random music conversation based on pretty much whatever topic we want. I'm your host, Lou Schwalbach, and along with me is, as always, Chad Knight.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Pretty good. Now, we've arrived at that magical, one could almost even say most wonderful time of year again.
Yeah, I suppose we have.
The days are short, the nights are long and cold, oft times filled with the hustle and bustle of shopping and people wishing goodwill upon their neighbors. The ones that they like. The sounds of bell ringers echoes through the air. Nearly everything is decorated in red, green, silver, or gold. Hot cocoa and spiced cider, whether spiked or not, go down really easily, while the radio and television stations devote much of their programming towards the seasonal shows, even if it's the same stuff we've seen over and over and over again. You know what, though? Even though we've all seen it a million times, we still clamor for it and eat it all up.
Oh, absolutely. Let's take a little segue here. Christmas movies.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, what are some of the best Christmas movies out there? If you had to name your top three, what do you got?
All right, well, favorite ones that I like to watch. Christmas Vacation.
Okay, fair enough.
Christmas Story. I'm sorry, I love watching Elf. As much as I don't like Will Ferrell, I think Elf is hilarious.
Okay.
Love Actually is actually a really good Christmas one, and people argue this one, but Die Hard or Lethal Weapon are both Christmas movies.
No, they're not.
But if we're talking classics, I think like your White Christmas, Holiday Inn, those are all good.
Those are all great. But I think my top three, and actually a couple of them are the classics, but you've already mentioned one, A Christmas Story.
Okay. Well,
you know, 1980-something, so it's getting to that age of being maybe a classic itself.
I think it's 87, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that. And then I've got, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed.
Yep.
Amazing movie.
I saw it once. I've literally seen it once. Period. Oh,
I watch it every year.
It's okay, but it's, I don't know.
But you have to watch it in black and white.
Well, yeah, because I'm sorry, colorizing is okay, but the weird tone that they gave for flesh tones looks goofy.
Yeah, and then finally, my favorite of all time is Miracle on 34th Street.
I have never seen that movie.
Really?
Yep.
And that one you have to watch in black and white. Even though, like, I will sit down with my kids and watch it in color because they don't believe anything in black and white can be good.
I know this is not Christmas, but have they never seen Schindler's List?
I've never seen Schindler's List.
Really? That is an incredibly powerful movie. The entire thing's black and white except for like one red jacket, and that's significant. But yeah, it's one that can make you cry unless you have a heart of stone.
So I seen you over there Googling, so what year did it come out in?
That's what I'm looking for right now, and of course I don't know how to type, so there we go. 1983, actually.
1983, okay, so A Christmas Story. So that's already 24 years old. 34 years old.
Yeah, it'd be 35 in a couple of years.
Yeah.
That's insane. So obviously, it's Christmas season. And Christmas time brings upon the music and songs of two camps. There's the religious, and there's the, well, not religious.
Or the secular.
Right, there you go. Seemingly, for every song about the birth of Jesus, there's another song about Santa Claus. One thing that both sides agree on, however, it's a time for hope and joy and love, regardless of what you believe. I'd say that's a fair assumption.
I would, yeah, absolutely.
Now, this year we're going to talk about some of our favorite Christmas songs and why they're significant to us. So it's time to gather around the tree with your loved ones, a mug of hot cocoa, and don't forget the Mallows, while we get this show started.
Excellent. All right, so a couple things about this. One, we're going to try to do something that actually might be quite a challenge for Lou and I. We're going to try not to swear during this episode, so that you can sit down and listen to it with your kids.
Okay, yeah. We've already talked about this, and I'm going to agree. I'm going to put on my best behavior.
Yeah, as am I. It's going to probably be hard, and watch out next week,
because
we'll have to make up for it.
Yeah, in spades.
How you been, man?
Pretty good. It was entertaining to get together recently and meet up with the family and friends and have a couple libations and just enjoy the company of people I enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. A little gamers Christmas party we had not too long ago, which
absolutely was
kind of fun. Gamers White Elephant, which was, I thought, everybody went over the top on that. I thought it was really cool.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, it's just something getting rid of, or somebody getting rid of something out of your closet that you didn't want anymore, but then it was brand new for somebody else, which was great.
Right, right. And we have one guy in the group that has got over 500 board games.
Oh, BT?
Yeah, and somehow he managed to get two board games that are not in his collection.
One of them was from us, actually.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that was one that I'm just like, oh, God, they have it in the store? Like, at Walmart, which I'm guessing is why he doesn't have it, because he probably buys all of his games at gaming shops.
Actually, I think he does it mostly through Amazon and stuff like that.
That could very well be, too. But, yeah, that was when his wife picked that one, I'm like, oh, no. But, no, it was very cool that it turned out the way it did.
Yeah, so we're not going to swear. We better drink.
Absolutely.
Should we get liquored up?
Let's get liquored up. So this week I brought something, and this was from the Great Dane Brewing Company. It's a brew pub that's over by, just off the interstate.
Yep.
Or highway, whatever it is going to be.
Yeah, right in Wausau.
It is a 7.5% pumpkin ale. Now, I know it's past the pumpkin spice time of Thanksgiving, but this one, it just kind of piqued my interest. I was there for an anniversary dinner, and I'm like, you know, that sounds kind of good. So I said, to heck with it. We're going to caught myself.
You did.
And brought it over for both of us. So cracked it open.
This is a 32-ounce can. He brought one can, so we're drinking out of cups. And he poured it before we started recording. And all I smell is hops. I don't smell pumpkin, but, you know.
It does have a bit of a back end on it that you'll appreciate. The reason I say that is because, of course, I tried a sample of it at the dinner.
Right.
Which was just enough to get the flavor. And I figured, you know what? I bet you I'd like this. So, and I think you might, too. So
all right. Let's give it a chance, man.
It kicks up on you in the back end, doesn't it? It's a little hoppy on the front, but in the back it...
It's really hoppy on the front. In fact, it kind of made my face contort. I'm not a hops guy. I prefer a nice, heavy malt, you know, dark beer. This is not a dark beer. It's darker than like a Budweiser, an American ale, something like that. But there's definitely a flavor of pumpkin on the back, though.
You know, it's almost like after you've swallowed your pumpkin pie, and you're like, wow, it's gone, but it's still there.
It's not a pumpkin spice, though. It's like pumpkin pie, and it just sits on the back of your tongue. I gotta say, this is better than I thought it was gonna be, but because it is so hoppy on the front, I'm gonna give it a bar.
Okay, I would give it a thumbs up because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, fair enough.
So we got a bar and a thumbs up?
Yeah.
Or a thumbs up at the bar.
Hey, it's always thumbs up at the bar, isn't it?
There you go. All right, so now we gotta do our next thing, and that's gonna be our trivia.
Oh, good. Is it Santa Claus trivia?
It is not Santa Claus trivia. However, it's funny because I picked two questions. One of which, if you would have picked one of the songs that you did, I was going to give, but being as how likely what I'm talking about is probably part of your information, so I decided to do a different question.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I guess. So what am I sitting at right now?
Oh, gosh, you are 9-6, I think?
9-6?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, because my question here, because of what you chose, was according to Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Okay.
What did their true love give them for the third day of Christmas?
Gosh.
And I know you've heard this song.
I have, but it's been a long time.
So, obviously...
I'll think on that.
Okay. And then after we talk about your songs, if you don't come up with the trivia question that I would have had for you, we'll talk about that one, too.
Okay.
So, we've got our question out there. I think you should get this one started.
All right. I'm going to kick off with the proverbial classic Christmas song, White Christmas by Bing Crosby. Now, the first public performance of the song was by Bing Crosby on his NBC radio show, The Kraft Music Hall, on Christmas Day, 1941. A copy of the recording from the radio program is owned by Crosby's estate and was loaned to CBS News Sunday Morning for their December 25, 2011 program. At first, Crosby did not see anything special about this song. He just said, "I don't think we have any problem with that one, Irving." The song established and solidified the fact that there could be commercially successful secular Christmas songs. In this case, written by a Jewish American songwriter who also wrote God Bless America. By the end of October 1942, White Christmas topped the Your Hit Parade chart. It remained in that position until well into the new year. It has often been noted that the mixture of melancholy, just like the ones I used to know, with comforting images of home, where the treetops glisten, resonated especially strongly with listeners during World War II. A few weeks after the attacks on Pearl Harbor, Crosby introduced White Christmas on a Christmas Day broadcast. Let's remember a White Christmas you've had.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas card I write. May your days Christmases be well.
This song, written by Irving Berlin and sung by Bing Crosby, is one of those songs for me that are hand-in-hand with the movie. I know it was around before the movie, and Irving Berlin did a great job with making a fantastic secular Christmas song long before it was really a thing. I absolutely love this song and the movie, and I think this is one of the best Christmas songs ever. I mean, for me personally, I hear this song and I think of my wife, because she loves that movie. To the point that she watches it throughout the year.
Okay.
You know, it's not just a Christmas song movie to her.
Christmas Vacation, I could watch that any time of the year.
Oh, sure, yeah.
It's funny all the time.
You know, and I always do Christmas in July, and I watch A Christmas Story.
Okay.
And I watch Miracle on 34th Street.
There you go.
You know, the top three.
Sure,
I'll do those in July. But White Christmas isn't on that list for me, but it is for other people I know. And I just think it's one of those songs that are, it just encapsulates the secular side of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it has nothing to do with Jesus or anything else, but it has to do with family and being around the hearth and being...
The season.
Yeah, and the season is as a time for families, but just being with your family and what comes from that.
Right.
So, I don't know, what are your thoughts on this one?
You know, I have to say, really, what can I say that hasn't already been said? I mean, it's a classic Christmas song that belongs in everybody's playlist. My notes even stated the same thing, and that's that Irving Berlin wrote it, sung by Bing Crosby. A lot of times songwriters do that for other artists, and this one is just another one that worked out great. It's just an excellent Christmas song. There's really nothing else to say about it.
Yeah, I agree. So what are you going to kick us off with?
I'm going to kick you off with Santa Baby by Kylie Minogue. Kylie Ann Minogue, also known as just Kylie, because she apparently thinks she's that.
Like Madonna?
Exactly. Is an Australian pop icon. Taking on the mantles of singer, songwriter, dancer, actress, and philanthropist. I hate saying that word because it's such a tongue twister.
It is.
Though she's done it all. She started off acting as a soap opera actress in Neighbors, and then her music career started covering Little Eva's The Locomotion in 1987, which I'm sure we all remember. It did hit number one. She's released a total of 13 studio albums, all of which went at least gold somewhere in the U.S., U.K., or Australia, and has spawned 63 singles. I did not know that she had that many singles out.
No.
According to the sources, she's working on a 14th studio album that's set to come out sometime in 2018, along with a new tour. And now with Santa Baby. Santa Baby is a oft-covered Christmas song that is about somebody wishing for gifts from Santa. Before we talk too much about that one, let's take a quick listen to Santa Baby.
Santa Baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa Baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. The
song was originally written in 1953 and released by none other than the Catwoman, Eartha Kitt. As a Batman fan, I'm sure that you are fully aware.
I am, in fact, that when I pulled up the song Santa Baby to get to Kylie...
You had to go through Eartha Kitt.
Through Eartha Kitt. So I had to stop and listen to the Eartha Kitt version, of course.
Of course. Now, it's sung from the point of view of a woman asking, kind of seductively, for some rather expensive things to be left as presents, such as a sable, not the former hot WWE lady, a yacht...
You know, I'm sorry, but I had to look up what a sable was.
So did I, and then I'm
it's a fur cloak, basically.
Sable's a critter.
Right.
But yes,
they make fur coats or whatever out of them.
But you and I both know the first thought when we heard sable.
Well, that was my first thought, but
of
then
course,
I'm like,
we
it
would
can't
probably,
be, it
well,
can't be that.
Well, I'm sure either one of us as guys would have liked a sable under the tree back when we were younger.
I can't disagree with that.
Just, you can leave Mark Miro alone. You know, he can stay outside. But in any respect, moving on, and a platinum mine with the deed. I mean, personally, I hate making gift lists because I feel like I'm being selfish. You know, it's like, what do you want for Christmas? If I ask for too much, then I feel just like I'm being greedy, and I hate that. This woman, however, feels it's pretty okay to shoot for the moon. I mean, hey, if you're going to ask, go big. I guess you never know unless you ask, right?
I guess not.
You know, it's been covered by a ton of different people, obviously, since I'm talking about a cover, like Ariana Grande, Eric Jacobson as Miss Piggy, Ashanti and Gwen Stefani, which actually Gwen Stefani version played at our Christmas get-together that we had.
Okay.
I noticed things like that in the background. And no other cover has performed Kylie Minogue's, though. Does it have personal feelings? Not really, other than the fact that I find her very easy on the eyes. It's just this side of being a naughty song because of the breathy tone to it. And that's pretty much why I enjoyed it.
All right. Now, to me, it's a cute little song about a girl who just wants
everything.
Yeah. The voice of Kylie is very different. It's high, breathy, and a little bit off-putting to me, actually. She's absolutely beautiful. You know, I feel about her a lot like I feel about Jackie Burkhart on That 70s Show. Really pretty? Just don't talk, or in this case, sing.
Looks nice, but mute the TV.
Right, exactly. I have kind of mixed feelings about this song, as it definitely showcases the dark side of Christmas. And for me, it makes it all about the gifts.
I can buy that.
I like to think of Christmas as about, you know, family and gifts being secondary.
It is, and I'd be honest, when it comes to Christmas for me, I love the look I get on people's faces once they see what I've purchased for them.
Yeah, I would much rather give than... Well, how do I say this? I love the feeling you get from giving. Mm-hmm. Do I still want to get? Sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just human nature.
Right, but it's one of those things, like you said, everybody always asks me, what do you want for Christmas? And, you know, this year, the big thing I want is one of those DNA, you know, like 23andMe or the Ancestry.com.
Yeah, those are actually on sale right now.
Yeah, I guess I've asked for it too much because the other day somebody asked me what I wanted and I said that and my wife turned on me and said, you can't keep asking for that.
Because you're going to end up getting like 35 copies of it.
But, you know, and that's the thing about me is I usually like focus on one thing at Christmas time. And then it's like, if I get that one thing.
What do you do?
Well, no, if I get that one thing, then it's like, then I got what I want. I mean, I'm at that point in my life now where I don't necessarily have a long list of things that I want.
I have a long list of things that I want because obviously I want a lot of stuff. But there's not a long list of things that I need. That's the difference.
Right.
And Christmas and birthdays, for example, gift-giving occasions that it's not about buying what you want. It's about buying something you need, but more so something you want.
Right. And for me, the list of things I want, I mean, if I need something, I'm at that point in my life where I go and I buy it. You know, there are some exceptions to that. There are some things that are too expensive for me that I, you know, I think I need, but I can't just go out and buy them. But for the most part, if it's something I need or something my kids need, I just go get it.
Within reason.
Right.
I mean... And you know, I'm the same way, too.
It's like, I mean, for example, you know my daughters. They are by no way are they spoiled.
No. I don't think anybody in either one of our families is spoiled.
No, not really.
Except for maybe our significant others. I don't know about you, but I
spoil. I tend to, yes. But
what's your limit? 100. What'd you spend? 150. Shut up.
That's it? You only went over by 50?
This year. I've doubled it.
You know, though, Nikki got me back, because not last year, but I think the year before, we usually do about $100. And she bought just a ton of stuff. And then, after, you know, a month later or something, I'm like, so what did you spend on Christmas? She was like, $350. And I'm like, I spent like $75 because you kept yelling at me not to overspend.
Yeah, because she didn't want you to overspend because she was going to.
She was doing it, yeah.
No, but that's just the thing. Just, I mean, it's not because I want to be like, oh, I'm the best gift giver ever. It's because I just like the...
It's that feeling of satisfaction that you made somebody else happy.
Exactly. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
So we kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent, so let's go ahead and bring us back with number three for you.
I am going to do I Saw a Mummy Kissing Santa Claus is a Christmas song with Mir...
What are you, British? I saw Mummy. Mummy. Mummy was kissing Santa Claus. Mummy.
You know what? And I almost swore there, and I stopped myself, people. You know what? I am a quarter British.
How do you know if you haven't heard your DNA kit?
Because, well, according to family history, I am a quarter British.
Just touching on that one, actually, that was my birthday present this last year. It was one of those little DNA kit things.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty slick. I'll have to show you that sometime.
How long does it take to get back once you do it?
About 6 weeks, maybe?
That's not bad.
But honestly, I mean, the hardest part was you send spit in.
Yeah.
But you have to conjure up a lot of spit and not eat for, like, an hour ahead of time or something. And, of course,
You're trying to say that I'm so fat I can't not eat for an hour?
I am. I found it hard, but thanks for bringing that part up. No, I meant the spit part. It's just like, our house is dry, so it's just like, this is terrible.
They're getting actual loogies instead of just spit.
So, you get more DNA with blood than spit, don't you? Here you go.
Just let me open a vein.
Exactly. No, but it's pretty cool. In fact, I'll show you the kit sometime. Not the spit part, obviously.
Thank you. But well, you sent that away. They don't send it back, do they?
No, God, no. Ew. But no, I'll show you the results sometime. It's actually pretty cool, and I know that especially this time of year, they do have the sales. So,
all right, so moving on. Just to make Lou happy, I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus.
I'm happy now.
Is a Christmas song with music and lyrics by British songwriter Tommy Connor, made popular by Jim Boyd in 1952 when he was only 13 years old. The Jackson 5 is my favorite version of the song, led by a young Michael and backed by his brothers Jackie, Tito, Jermaine, and Marlon. This is a great Motown version of this classic Christmas song. Here, take a listen for yourself. So I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus is one of those funny songs, right? You know what I mean. It has dual meanings depending on who's listening to it. A kid is like, I'm telling Dad that Mom is kissing another man. And the only thing missing is the little kid not wanting to get in trouble with Santa so he could still get presents. He's like, I want to tell on Mommy, but then Santa won't bring me presents, you know?
Right.
But then there's the dual version. It's, you know, I hear it as a parent and I think, fantasy under the Christmas tree, or is that just me?
It's probably just you, but I was hearing it as, you know, Dad is Santa Claus. He just dressed up as Santa Claus.
And that's the idea. That's the idea right. For parents. But for kids, it's like, you know, my dad never did that. My dad never dressed up as Santa Claus.
No. Oh, I take that back. My dad did. In fact, sometimes we did a Christmas in July, he would actually take off on his Harley dressed as Santa Claus.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we got pictures of it. It's pretty cool.
That's nice. But what are your thoughts on this song and this version of it?
Okay, it's a good thing you mentioned that one. Now, I personally don't care for this version. I remember singing this song at the bank. Remember when we were kids? We
all the M&I Bank downtown.
Yep. M&I,
First American.
It was First American M&I, and then we went to Colonial Manor to sing because that's what they did. They sent us the old people to sing.
Yep. The old people love that stuff though.
And they ate that stuff up.
I mean, if they sent you down, you know, to any other office building than the bank, and the bank wasn't just the bank. It was a ton of places in there.
The best part of going to the bank, though?
The chocolate candy coins. The chocolate candy coins.
I still get those.
Do you?
To this day. They're probably not the greatest chocolate ever, but I still get them, and I'm just like, chocolate coins. But
the old people, when you went there, there was such joy and happiness on their face.
They light up because they probably don't get a lot of visitors. So seeing a bunch of kids come in, even if the kids were forced...
And sang horribly because we were in grade school.
Exactly. No, it was, I went to a Catholic school, so obviously we did that. It must have been a charity thing that we had, like, a checklist for.
Right.
No, I enjoyed that, the singing, because it was just, actually, it was getting out of school. But getting back with that one, again, I didn't really care for this version of it. I'm not a big fan of Michael Jackson's younger self. The Jackson 5 is all right for me when they do the pop songs, the Motown songs. It's okay. Michael plays up the cute factor, and that just doesn't work for me.
Okay.
So, I like the song, don't really care so much for this version of it.
Okay, fair enough. What do you got next?
We're going to go completely off the rails on this one.
Okay.
And go with O Come All Ye Faithful, which is...
Wait. How is that off the rails?
Just wait. By Twisted Sister. Yeah, and I'm just going to say, I know what you're thinking. A Christmas song by Twisted Sister.
No, not a Christmas song. A Christmas album.
This is true. They did the whole album, and... You got to hear me out on this one. First, a little history. Twisted Sister formed in 72 in Hohokus, New Jersey. Literally, the city is called Hohokus.
I know. We talked about that 1 week ago, 2 weeks ago.
It could very well have been. But I mean, what better of a Christmas city?
Yeah,
Hohokus. Seriously, exactly. Later, they based themselves out of Long Island, New York. Daniel D. Snyder and the boys started off playing cover songs and finally broke out, releasing their own material in 1982, Under the Blade. They continued touring and releasing metal through 6 more studio albums, going on their farewell tour in the years of 2015 and 2016, which I'm a little surprised it's as late as it was. Dee Snider has kept himself busy with a radio show and performing live occasionally. And now we get to the song itself. O Come All Ye Faithful is a Christmas song that I think everybody knows who has gone to elementary school. Regardless if you go to Catholic school, public school, whatever the case is, I'm sure the alternative high school probably even has knowledge of this song.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Everybody knows the song. In fact, it's funny because I remember singing this one at First American and Colonial Manor, as we mentioned before. While we sang different arrangements, we never sung it like this, and I wish we would have.
I bet you the audience listening would not have enjoyed a bunch of 7th graders singing O Come All Ye Faithful in heavy metal style.
Exactly. Now, let's go ahead and take a listen, shall we?
Come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Come ye all.
this song came off of 2006's A Twisted Christmas, and it's the Twisted Sisters' take on a classic song that is actually sung to their hit, We're Not Gonna Take It. Imagine the music from We're Not Gonna Take It singing O Come All You Faithful.
Yeah, but it kind of gets lost in there because the song is so... They're very close.
They are, you know, and the thing is, too, is they do go ahead and they repeat a couple portions of the song instead of actually doing it the way that the actual hymn is supposed to be. But it's enough that it works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just love this song. I wish they would have done this one in church. I wish, because I'm sure some of the old farts that were in there might have had a heart attack, which might have made church more interesting, because I'm sorry, Christmas Mass sucks. It's way too long, especially for a kid who's waiting
Christmas
to
get... Eve Mass.
Well, did you go to midnight or 4 o'clock?
When I was a kid, we always went to midnight.
See, and did you...
Which really started at 10 p.m.
Did you do Christmas... I'm sorry. Did you do gifts on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
Christmas Day.
See, we did Christmas Eve, and it was always go to Christmas Mass at 3 o'clock and then come home and wait for Dad to finish eating, because usually he would, you know, have snacks. That's what we would always do, meatballs or summer sausage or whatever the case is. And then when he was good and satisfied, we're all chomping at the bit, waiting for presents. He's like... Oh, I guess we can do it now. And that's how it turned out. So
your old man loved to mess with you.
What old man hasn't? I mean, seriously, are you telling me your dad never did?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay, exactly. Now, of course, this is the time when it's like, okay, well, I want. We're waiting. We can see everything all under the tree. You know, you're kind of like at the runners at the starter's gate waiting for someone to play Santa and hand it out. And he's just got, it's like, oh, no, I'm going to refill my plate again. I'm like, no! Eat some other time! All right, I enjoy the heck out of this song. So, yeah, I really, really enjoy this one. And the rest of the album's okay, but this is probably the best of all of them.
Now, I gotta say, a heavy metal version of a religious song. I love Twisted Sister. And begrudgingly, I have to say that I enjoyed this song as well. If someone had told me that a heavy metal version of this song would be pleasing to the ear, I would have scoffed at them. What makes this song work, in my opinion, is Dee Snider's voice. The guy can actually sing.
Oh, he's not a screamer. He's got a really good voice, actually.
And I like what I'm hearing here. I mean, it wasn't a mockery like a lot of songs in this vein are or could be. It was just a pure metal cover song of the original.
Right.
It was done very well. I really enjoyed it. I even, after I'd listened to it, I said to my wife and my daughter, I'm like, you got to listen to this. And, of course, the music hits and they're like, what are we listening to?
And then the words hit.
And then the words hit and they're like... This is so wrong. And then, you know, Nikki, of course, it was still wrong. But Molly was kind of like, you know, I could get into this.
I knew I always liked her.
So, yeah. But, you know, I overall, considering it's a heavy metal covering a religious song, I thought it was done very well.
Absolutely. So what do you got next for us?
Well, I'm going to go with the classic. The Christmas song, commonly subtitled Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. Or as it was originally subtitled, Merry Christmas to You.
Merry Christmas to You!
Okay. It is a classic Christmas song written in 1945 by Bob Wells and Mel Torme. According to Torme, the song was written during a blistering hot summer. In an effort to stay cool by thinking cool, the most performed, according to BMI, Christmas song was born. I saw a spiral pad on Wells' piano with four lines written in pencil, Torme recalled. They started... Chestnuts roasting, Jack Frost nipping, Yuletide carols, folks dressed up like Eskimos. Bob didn't think he was writing song lyrics. He said he thought if he could immerse himself in winter, he could cool off. 40 minutes later, the song was written. I wrote all the music and some of the lyrics. Let's see if we get chilly listening to this.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir. And folks dressed up like Eskimos.
Mel Torme, a man with a honey voice, makes this a song that is really fun. I always thought of this as an old person song.
Yeah, I can buy that.
You know, when I was younger. Now as an adult of a certain age, I find it a very nice song of picturesque Christmas scenes. Scenes that I would love to see and be a part of. What do you think?
Have you ever eaten chestnuts?
Possibly.
I mean, we've had water chestnuts because we all did Chinese food. But, like, they talk about chestnuts roasting on an open fire. I know chestnuts, we had a chestnut tree when I was a kid, those spiky little things that you step on barefoot and it sucks.
Yeah. They have to be cooked in order to eat, though.
Because otherwise they're poisonous. Right.
Yeah.
I've never had chestnuts other than water chestnuts.
So I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure if I have either.
I mean, I kind of want to, and I've always wanted to ever since I heard the song. I never knew that he was one of the original writers, being Mel Torme. The only thing I knew about really Mel Torme was from Night Court.
Of course, yep.
Because Harry Stone was a huge fan of Mel Torme. In fact, I think he showed up on a couple episodes.
Yeah, he was on, I want to say, maybe a handful, five, six of them.
Because he would kind of talk to his own psyche, and Mel Torme would show up like, Mel, what am I going to do? And then he walks in or whatever, which is all well and cool, but before Night Court, I never heard of the guy.
Yeah, and I don't know a lot of Mel Torme's stuff, but he does have a honey voice. He's a crooner, but
I think he doesn't get the respect that he should, because he's done a lot of songwriting and a lot of singing that really is more prolific than we give him credit for.
Oh, absolutely.
So, as far as the song, it's a classic song. I mean, really, there's nothing else to say about it. I mean, everyone's heard the song. Everyone knows some of the lyrics for it. I don't know everybody who knows all of the lyrics for it, but everyone knows Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, which is why they subtitled it. What else is there to really say?
Yeah, I agree. So, what do you got?
We're going to stick with the classics and go with a little Holly Jolly Christmas by Burl Ives. Burl Ives was an American singer and actor who was known for being a wandering musician. It started when he was in college and out of nowhere realized he was wasting his time during a lecture on Beowulf, so I can buy that, and just up and left. He walked out. In the 40s, he started out his own radio show, The Wayfaring Stranger. And that was pretty much where he got his big break. After the Army, he continued writing and recording until retiring in 1989, doing occasional benefit shows as late as 1993.
Wow.
I didn't know he survived that long.
No, I didn't either.
He passed away from oral cancer in 1995 at 85 years old, but obviously not before giving us Holly Jolly Christmas, which, I don't know about you, but I've been hearing ever since we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
And let's go ahead and relive some of that childhood with listening to Holly Jolly Christmas.
Have a holly jolly Christmas, and when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, kiss her once for me.
It was originally written by Johnny Marks, which I know that is going to come up on another list or another part of your list that we talked about, and was covered by Burl Ives. It was featured on the stop-motion TV show Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and Ives was the snowman narrator, Sam. I loved that. I don't know about you, but I looked forward to it every year, and just like one of those things at the very beginning, we've seen it a million times, but we still love to watch it.
Yeah.
It's cheesy as heck, but we still watch it.
I own it on DVD, actually.
As do I. I think we talked about that one, too. Since then, it's been covered mostly by country artists, but none have the same homey feeling as Burl Ives does. And as I mentioned before, we all used to huddle around the TV waiting for Rudolph and Frosty, of course, because you had to have Happy Birthday!
Yeah.
It just brings back thoughts of childhood and nostalgia. I mean, that's all I got about it. You know, it's a great song.
Yeah. You know, what can be said about this song that Lou already didn't say? I mean, classic, classic Christmas song. Burl Ives had a voice that I really enjoyed. More Christmas music because, hooray, Christmas!
Yeah, exactly.
So, thumbs up. I like that one.
Absolutely. And like, I love his voice. I mean, he's got like a grandpa's voice.
Absolutely.
That you can just see anybody's grandpa sitting back there with the big old white beard and with the triangle, because he had one of those pointy beards, too.
Yeah.
Just like the snowman did. And just the voice was just so perfect that I can't imagine anybody else singing it in the same way as he did.
No, I would agree.
So let's move on and see what you got next.
Well, up next I've got I Wish Every Day Could Be Like Christmas by Bon Jovi. I think this one may make people a little confused. But in the U.S., the song I Wish Every Day Could Be Like Christmas is the B-side to Bon Jovi's Keep the Faith in 1992.
What?
When they released their single?
I mean, I know Keep the Faith. I've heard that song a ton of times.
Right.
Wow.
So, let's take a quick listen to the song, because I don't have a lot of info on this, but let's take a listen, and then we'll talk a little bit more.
I wish every day could be like Christmas, and if I could have one wish come true, I wish every day could be full of peace
So it's an excellent sweet Christmas song. Classic ballad from Bon Jovi. It really sort of confused me that it was the B-side with Keep the Faith, as the song is not on the Keep the Faith album. But that said, I really enjoyed the song. You know, what more can I say about it? It's a standard Bon Jovi ballad. What are your thoughts on this?
Okay, I did not know this song existed.
Woo, I found you a new one!
Exactly, I had no idea about this one. It's an obligatory Christmas song by every artist, because I think every artist who signs a record contract has some rider in there that says you have to do a Christmas song at least once in your career.
Maybe.
I mean, think about it. Pick any artist off the top of your head, and I'll bet you they've done a Christmas song.
Slayer.
I'll bet you somewhere down the road they have.
We're going to have to check that one out.
We're going to have to look. Now, hey, if you're listening and want to send in, if you can find us a Slayer Christmas song or one of the artists who work in Slayer, you know, one of the members of the band who have recorded a mass version of a Christmas song, let us know. But, yeah, and now you're looking. I see.
I am.
Anyhow, it's okay. I mean, I know it's Bon Jovi, and I know you got a big...
It has nothing to do with that, man. It's an okay song. I would agree with you.
It's an okay song. It's not a great one. I prefer the A side, and there's a reason it probably went on the B side. It's just okay. That's all I got to really say about this. That's all I have to say about that. So, should we move on?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, we're going to go with another cover by a rock and roll artist, and that's going to be Santa Claus is Coming to Town by Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, I believe.
You'd know better about that than me.
All right, now the boss gave us his take on this Christmas classic song. Bruce Springsteen is an American songwriter and singer who is known as the boss, as I just mentioned. Not just because I said so, but somebody did.
Oh my, okay, I'm gonna pause you right there.
Okay.
Slayer. They have done...
Shut up. Found something?
Merry Slayer Christmas.
Of course they did.
They performed the Christmas carols, a.k.a. Santa Awaits. Hail Santa.
I think they spelled it wrong. Shouldn't that be Hail Satan if it's Slayer?
And that's all I can find off the top. But that was just off a quick Google search.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing, too, is, I mean, you and I don't care for Slayer because
no.
I think it was a Tori that sent us one.
Yeah.
And it was not a... We weren't fans of that. So I'm almost wondering how that's going to turn out. I think we may have to lessen this one offline.
Yeah, I think so, possibly.
Now, getting back with here, Bruce Springsteen got the musical bug from hearing Sinatra on the radio and seeing Elvis on the Ed Sullivan Show, which I'm sure a lot of people did, because what was that, one of the most watched episodes of almost anything ever? Springsteen bought his first guitar for less than $20 in 1964, which actually is the same year that the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show. Obviously, you probably knew that off the top of your head. And since then, well, let's back up a little bit. His career started off pretty slowly. Didn't really start to take off until his third album, which was Born to Run. And great, it's a great album. It really is. I personally prefer Born in the USA better, but Born to Run was a decent one. Apparently, it's all about being born. So moving on. Since then, he's toured nearly constantly, having ups and downs, as all artists have, releasing 18 studio and 23 live albums, all of which have gone gold or better in spawning 70 singles. All of them. He hasn't released a single album that hasn't gone gold. That's impressive.
It is impressive. I think people have bad taste in music.
Well, we're not even going to get into that one. But let's go ahead and take a quick listen to Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and then we'll talk some about it. Santa Claus is Coming to Town is one of those songs that it's a classic tune, but is a lot older than most people think. It was written and recorded first in 1934.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was an immediate success. The traditional song has been covered and recovered a bajillion times, all the way from Sinatra to Bjork to Pentatonix and back. A Bjork cover of Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Don't even get me started on that swan wearing.
Yeah, we're continuing on. Springsteen gave us this take on this in 1981 with his Everyman Yearning voice, which is backed by the E Street Band, which included Clarence Clemons, who was an amazing saxophone player, and Max Weinberg, which, if you watch Conan O'Brien, I think he's part of the backing band.
Okay.
At least he was. The song played all over the radio back in the day, but it was such a good cover of the song that nobody minded hearing it. of course, they did some audience participation, and he did some of his, like, have you been a good girl and boy? Well, I hope so, because Santa Claus is coming to town. You know, just how he could only do in his, like, little voice or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed it. I always enjoyed waiting for this song to come on. In fact, I even remember WIFC playing this one at Christmas time all the time, because back in the day, they played more than just Top 40. They played a little bit of everything. So,
yeah, true enough.
But what do you think?
Well, as I've stated before, I'm not a huge Springsteen fan.
Are you a greatest hits Springsteen fan?
Probably.
Okay.
I would be okay with the greatest hits. But this song is actually pretty neat. The upbeat rendition of this song is very catchy. I really enjoyed it. I mean, mostly I think because Bruce's voice is drowned out quite a bit by the instruments. The brass is a nice addition to this song. And it's a great cover of a classic song. So, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about Bruce more than I already have.
Right.
It's a good cover of a classic Christmas song. I don't mind listening to it. It comes on the radio. I'd probably be get caught singing along
caught
with
it.
But, you know, it's a classic Christmas song. It's a Christmas song I really enjoy. And it's not a bad version of it.
Okay, and why don't we leave it at that before any more negativity comes out of it? And why
Fair
don't you
enough.
Tell us the next one?
All right, up next I have Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's a song written by Johnny Marks, as you had stated before. We'd have another one coming up. And was on the 1939 story, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, published by the Montgomery Ward Company. Gene Autry's recording hit number one on the U.S. charts the week of Christmas 1949. Let's see Rudolph's nose glow so bright.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games.
I have to say, though, if you can see Rudolph's nose glowing bright and you're listening to this, I think you've had a little bit too much nod.
Quite possibly. So I love this song. I remember all those years in grade school and middle school when we were forced us to sing the Christmas songs for choir. Now, I love singing, and I really enjoy singing Christmas songs. I won't put Lou or anyone else through the torture of hearing me sing, though. This is one of the endearing classic Christmas songs. One that kids and adults alike not only know, but because of its easy vocal arrangement, can sing it. So now, sing it with your family. Now, sing it! So, Lou, what do you think of the song?
Oh, you know, and this is really funny, and I'm going to put my notes out there. I'm going to read exactly what I have written because it's kind of comical.
Okay.
And that's when we first originally decided to do a Christmas episode for 2017. It was going to be Chad wanted to do the Johnny Marks version, which come to find out is very difficult to come across unless you actually buy a classic CD or classic album.
Yep.
My first thought when I heard the song says, "Well, this is good, but I like Gene Autry's version better." So, when it came out that it was swapped for the better version, because I think Autry personally has a better voice, yay, go Gene Autry. No, classic, it's a great Christmas song. I remember singing the crap out of it when we were kids.
Yep.
We all sang that. In fact, remember the callbacks that we had, you know, playing reindeer games like Monopoly and whatever
yep.
else.
Like George Washington.
Exactly. We were stupid as we were kids, some of which haven't grown out of it.
Well, you know, but we weren't the stupid ones. It was our music teachers. They told us what to say.
Really?
Yeah, ours did.
Ours didn't. It just came across. In fact, because there was there was all kinds of different schools in town here. So let's just say for high schools, for example, West, East, West, Newman, and Everest.
Yep.
Everybody had friends from other schools. So, of course, if it came out in another school, it would eventually get to the other one. So, of course, I went to St. Michael's. Where did you go for elementary?
Rib Mountain.
I know they had like Horace Mann in town too. So if you had somebody from Horace Mann who has friends and whatever else, it would still come through. So
right.
We heard it not from our teachers because we got admonished from our teachers from doing that.
Oh, we never did. It was part of what we were told to do.
Oh, no. We weren't supposed to, and we did it anyways. And, of course, we got the evil eye.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you got to remember, too, you went to Catholic school.
Truth.
And it was probably a little more touchy. To the fact that you were even singing a secular song versus...
Not really.
No.
That's the thing is, we were okay with singing the songs, but it was supposed to be done exactly how we want it. Which is kind of how the Catholic religion is, exactly how we want it. So, no, it's a great song. There's really nothing else to say. We already talked about the stop-motion animation one from back in the day, which I kind of want to go home and watch now. Just because it was so entertaining, but entertainingly bad.
Right, right.
So I enjoy it.
All right, so what do you got next?
Next, we're going to go with a little Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree by Brenda Lee. It's another oldie but goodie. Brenda Lee, who was born Brenda Mae Tarpley, I can see why she changed her name.
Yeah.
Is an American singer that started off as a child performer, winning a singing contest when she was 6 years old. Then, and get this, she ended up being the primary breadwinner of her family at age 10.
Wow.
By singing on TV shows, radio shows, and local events. She kept singing and performing and finally hit the big time in the 1960s with her hit, I'm Sorry. I know you know that song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which is considered her signature song. She mainly performed country, but has performed all across the genres, and is still technically active today and is very involved with the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Okay.
In the span of her career, she's released 29 studio albums and 72 singles, three of which were number ones. Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree was one of them. So let's go ahead and get a little rockin' on our side. Rockin' around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Then we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling. You will get a sentimental feeling when you hear voices singing, let's be jolly, pet claws with bottles of honey.
I was going to say, you know, think about that, though. Think about what you read, where she became the breadwinner for her family at the age of 10. Could you imagine you at 10, your dad going, well, son, you got to get a job. And not only do you have to get a job for yourself to do whatever, but you got to take care of the family, too.
At 10 years old, I was just happy we got chocolate milk at school at lunch.
Exactly. I mean, just the idea that that was...
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a sad story, but the fact that she's still prolific... And everything turned out kind of roses was great.
Right, right.
So good job, Brenda Lee. Brenda, with your Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree song, it's another classic that's been covered by a ton of people, all the way from Bill, Rock Around the Clock Haley, to Hannah Montana, which with your children, I'm sure you've probably heard a ton of Hannah Montana.
Yes, I
you
have.
You might have even heard this one.
Possibly.
It was written by Johnny Marks. Imagine that.
He seems to write a lot of Christmas songs.
He does. Kind of like when we did our covers one, we had Otis Redding, who did a ton of stuff.
Right.
It was written by Johnny Marks for Brenda Lee in 1958. It was a bit of a departure from the slow, methodical Christmas music that people came to expect. And it worked wonder for the artist and music in general. Because everybody was used to, like, White Christmas and all kinds of slow holiday music. And then all of a sudden we got a rockin' tune sung by a woman, no less. Because right. that was 50s and 60s. It wasn't really commonplace.
Well, and it was a rockin' tune where, I mean, by today's standards, it wasn't all that rocking. But
back then...
Oh, yeah, it was huge.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was like a Christmas version of Elvis.
Yeah.
You know? Now, Christmas music doesn't have to be sappy, and this song did great wonders to emphasize that point. You know, the song shows up in many Christmas-themed movies where it's supposed to be jovial and fun, like Home Alone when Kevin is fooling around and... tricking the wet bandits into thinking there's a party going on. Just watched that the other day. That's why that example came up, actually.
Okay,
but
fair enough.
If you watch any Christmas movie that's out there, with the exception of like Charlie Brown or whatever else, there's probably a list of about 5 holiday songs that you will hear in any one of these movies. And this is going to be one of those.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And it's just a good song. Her voice gets a little grating, but it works.
You know, it's a classic Christmas song for me. Brenda Lee's voice... has that definite sound of the music of that era. You can tell that this was written in the 50s or 60s, just from the style of music. It's a little upbeat, and the brass saxophone is a nice touch in the song. What else can I say? I could listen to this for hours on end. Great song, you know? Yay, Christmas!
Yeah, it's going to go on your holiday list, right? Or your Christmas playlist.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be there.
All right, so let's see what's going to be coming up next for you.
All right, so up next is All I Want for Christmas Is You. Mariah Carey and Walter A. wrote and released this song in 1994. It has been covered numerous times by numerous people. Let's take a listen to Miley Cyrus covering this.
Pause for a second. This song was written as recently as the 90s?
Yeah, this song came out in 1994.
Wow. I thought the song was older than that.
No, not at all.
It's unfortunate that Mariah Carey had to be the writer of it, but at the same time, at least it's been covered by quality people such as...
Miley Cyrus.
There you go. Blah, 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 blah. All right, what do you got to say?
I really enjoy this cover of the song. The pure voice that she brings to the song, along with the upbeat tempo, is just amazing. Plus, a little bit of me likes to think that she's singing this to me. Okay, not really.
But a bit of you likes that.
But an old guy can have dreams too. That aside, the version you heard was recorded live in 2007 during a Disney Christmas parade. The fact that this is live, and I can't believe how nothing was botched, and the fact it's live tells me that there was no auto-tune going on. It's a great Christmas song, whether it's Mariah Carey or Miley Cyrus. It's just good.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one. I like this song, and it's funny because I hadn't actually heard it by Miley before, so okay. I just said I like this song, and I'm guessing that I like this version too. And it turns out I do. Miley's, say what you will about Miley Cyrus, she's got an amazing voice.
Yes.
I think this was prior to her going...
This was still in the 2007. It would have been the end of the Hannah Montana, but she hadn't stepped over the line yet.
Right, and you can kind of tell that by the voice because it kind of got a bubblegum voice to it,
yep.
And it just works. It works amazing. I'm sure that with her current voice, per se, finger quotes, it would still work, but I think it works better in the older tone.
Okay, fair enough. What do you got?
All right, next I got here is Christmas Eve / Sarajevo 1224 by Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I'm sorry. In fact, I get goosebumps whenever I hear of this song. I really do. Trans-Siberian Orchestra, I'm going to say a.k.a. TSO because it's going to be a lot easier to say going forward, was formed in 1993 by Paul O'Neill, John Oliva, and Al Petrelli. The latter two were from the heavy metal band Sabotage. O'Neill had managed and produced rock bands from the likes of Aerosmith, AC/DC, and Scorpions, and later Sabotage. He always worked in the background and created TSO with members of Sabotage, created members that he had worked with in the past, and it just seemed to work. It really wasn't until 1996 when his vision became a reality. He accepted Atlantic Records' offer to start their own band. Their debut album, the rock opera Christmas Eve and Other Stories, released later that year, and it was the first of their Christmas trilogy. It sold well and actually is still one of the top-selling albums. Sadly, Paul O'Neill passed away in April of 2017, and they lost bassist David Z., in July of 2017, but they've continued to record and tour, being one of the top ticket-selling bands of the new millennium as per Billboard magazine and Pollster. Christmas Eve Sarajevo is an instrumental, so I know you're not a huge fan of instrumentals, but I'm sure you know of this one, and I'm sure you probably appreciate it. I think that we should let the listeners appreciate some of Christmas Eve Sarajevo. The song itself is a medley of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, and I have no idea how to pronounce this, it's Shchedryk, it's S-H-C-H-E-D-R-Y-K, which was later adapted and is better known as Carol of the Bells. It was originally released on Sabotage's Dead Winter Dead and re-released by TSO because TSO was a side project of Sabotage members. It apparently has a story behind it. There is a lone cello player who has forgotten Christmas and was in war-torn land of Sarajevo and is just playing music. I don't know about all that, but wow. This is an amazing Christmas song. The TSO puts on a great concert, and this is one of those that rocks enough that they play it on more than the top 40 stations. I've heard it all over the place. I'm sure you've heard a ton of it. I just have to say that when seeing them and play this song live is incredible. They made it snow indoors. The stage was like a transformer. They had pyro and fire flames that came up that made everybody warm inside the amphitheater.
Okay.
And they literally walked around with the person who played violin actually went through the entire, every seat in the house, which it was just amazing. The stage was a dang transformer. I mean, literally it changed depending on what song they were doing.
Okay.
I can't say enough. If you haven't seen them live, I highly recommend it. They're a great show. And for any kind of holiday, they'll kill it because they've done Halloween music. They've done other classic stuff. And now, just here's the other thing I was going to say. And if you don't think you're going to be able to sit through 3+ hours of Christmas music, don't worry at all, because they go all over the place during their shows. When I went to the concert, the two lead guitarists did a Zeppelin battle and Ozzy. So one did Zeppelin music, the other one did Ozzy music, and they did a guitar battle after doing Christmas music.
Okay.
It's just amazing. I love this song. I know that they did the Ding Frieser Dunn thing, which was still pretty hilarious too, but I can't not listen to this song and get in the spirit immediately. I don't know. What do you think?
This is a beautiful arrangement and song. In the classic style of TSO, the song is a raucous flurry of piano, guitar, and other instruments. This is a different take on God Rest You Merry Gentlemen and Carol of the Bells. It's fun, and I enjoy TSO in small doses. They can actually get to be too much for me to handle if I listen too long.
I can buy that.
It's just, it's very aggressive music.
Oh, it is.
And if I listen to it for too long, it can get kind of...
too much.
Yeah, too much. I love this one, though. Let's hope they only get better from here. I mean, Christmas is awesome.
I would firmly agree with this. I personally prefer TSO versus Mannheim, but that's just personal preference. So what's your last one that you're going to grace us with?
All right, so this one's kind of a strange one. Well, it is and it isn't. O Holy Night is a well-known Christmas carol composed by Adolphe Adam in 1847 to the French poem Midnight Christians. And I have the French name here, but I'm not going to ruin it.
I appreciate that.
By a wine merchant and poet, Placide, I believe it's Capot, in Roquemaure, at the end of the year 1843, the church organ was recently renovated. To celebrate the event, the parish priest asked Capot, native from this town, to write a Christmas poem, even though the latter never showed an interest in religion. And Capot obliged. Soon after, Adam wrote the music. The song was premiered in Roquemaure in 1847 by the opera singer Emily Lowry. Unitarian minister John Sullivan Dwight, editor of Dwight's Journal of Music, created a singing edition based on Capot's French text in 1855. In both the French original and the two familiar English versions of the carol, as well as many other languages, the text reflects on the birth of Jesus and of humanity's redemption. Now, when I tell you who is singing this version of the song, listener, you might have had the same reaction I did when I heard it for the first time. Here is Lizzie Hale and Hailstorm singing O Holy Night.
O Holy Night, the stars are brightly shining. This is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin.
This rendition of the song is almost haunting. I spent a full 4 minutes the first time waiting for Hailstorm to really kick in, but they keep it very traditional. Lizzie's vocals are amazing. I mean, I knew she could wail, but this was amazing, and if you disagree with me, you're wrong. You're just wrong. This shows you how great a singer she is. I was just blown away by this. What are your thoughts, Lou?
You know, and I hadn't heard this song before. I mean, I've heard Hailstorm, of course, because right. That's how you got your introduction.
Yep.
And my first thought was, well, I dig Hailstorm, so I'm sure it's going to be awesome. And I was not disappointed. I've heard this song a ton because of, you know, singing Christmas carols and Catholic school and all that other fun stuff.
Right.
My sources may be off, but according to my sources, it was done in her hotel room, maybe?
I don't know.
Because the production quality isn't exactly great.
No, it's not.
However, it still showcases the fact that she's got an amazing voice. I mean, she can dial it down or she can crank it up. Just like you said, she can wail, which obviously is the case. But she knocked it down to the point where if she wants to, she can still have a good tone to it. And even if the kids are sleeping, she'll be able to still belt out a Christmas tune.
Yeah.
I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. So why don't you go ahead and round us out?
All right. And I'll be honest, I know my dad's going to appreciate this one, and I appreciate this. Apparently, it runs in the family, and that's because I have the Christmas song, Christmas Don't Be Late, by David Seville and the Chipmunks. Come on, man, really, do I have to explain? I mean, come on. All right, well, I'm going to anyways, because there may be a couple people out there who don't quite know. Ross Bagdasarian Sr. was an actor musician known by his stage name of David Seville, which is nice because trying to say his real name was kind of a pain in the butt. His earliest success, aside from performing on Broadway, was co-writing Come Anna My House, that was recorded by Rosemary Clooney in 1951. He also had some bit parts in movies, most notably Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window, but his real claim to fame came when he started writing novelty records in 1956. His creation of the Chipmunks led to his stardom that continued even after he passed away with his son Ross Jr. and Ross's wife, who voices the Chipettes. Let's just play the clip because
You should see Lou. He's got this...
I'm kind of giddy, okay?
He's got this giddy, big smile on his face. So let's listen to it. Let's just listen to it.
The Chipmunk song was written and performed by Ross B. Sr. as David Seville in 1958. Just like in his prior release, Witch Doctor, he used editing to change the tone of his own voice, but this time he did it in three distinct ways for Alvin, Simon, and Theodore. Seville conducts the Chipmunks, who sing as kids, would sing about the things that are very important to children about that time of year, hoping that Christmas hurries up and telling Santa exactly what they want. It's a classic song. It does not get old. It's so iconic that when they rebooted the Chipmunks in the 2007 live-action movie with Jason Lee, they even used that song again. I love this song. It's from the 50s, and this could be considered an oldies song that I could listen to. This is one I'll put on repeat, and I'll listen to over and over, much like you had earlier with Rockin' Around.
Yeah.
I love this song.
It's a fun, fun song. The Chipmunks are an instant nostalgia act. And it's not guilty nostalgia, it's wonderful nostalgia. The song is done with a banjo or similarly stringed instrument, Dave talking to the boys and always yelling at Elvin. It's just fun. To paraphrase The Cure, Christmas, I'm in love.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. So, you know, it was great, but should we finish out with...
Trivia? All right. So we're going to do the trivia. Let's go ahead and do the question one more time. And then I actually have my second question that you didn't touch on.
Okay.
So we'll go into that one. We'll do a twofer for you today. And that's my Christmas present to you.
Oh, goody. So I can be 9 and 8.
All right. So according to Bob and Doug McKenzie, what did their true love get them on the third day of Christmas?
You know, I've been thinking about this when I haven't been talking this entire show. And
well, you know what they gave them for the first day?
No, I don't remember.
It was a beer.
Right.
In a tree.
So three beers?
Actually, three was three French toast.
Three French toast. Okay, fair enough.
Because two was two turtlenecks, and then it was three French toast, and I, off the top of my head, I'll have to listen to this song. But so now, here's the other question. Okay. It was actually regarding White Christmas.
Okay.
The Irving Berlin classic White Christmas was written for what film?
Written for what film? Holiday Inn, I believe.
You'd be correct, which came out in 1942. But most people think, well, White Christmas is the name of the movie, and that's what it was for. And that's not correct, because that's 12 years later, and that was the finger quote new version.
Right.
So that's because I thought you were going to touch on that. That's why I didn't ask that one. But
oh, okay. So, yeah, that's I'm at 10 and 7 now.
Okay, listen up, everybody. Turn up your volumes. Announcement.
That would be absolutely correct. What do you got for us?
Okay, so let's start off. We still got a little bit of time here before EverCon, where you and I will be live doing a show on Sunday afternoon.
Right.
Basically, EverCon is a gaming convention held in central Wisconsin in Schofield, I guess, Rothschild,
yeah.
And it is great family fun. It's 3 days of gaming, podcasts, special guests.
Absolutely. They got some anime-type stuff there.
Yep, they do.
They have. If they did it like last year, they're going to have like video game stuff going on, too.
I believe there is video game stuff going on. I'm no longer part of the managing group of this, so I know about as much as you do, maybe a little bit more, but not much.
Okay.
But anyway, it's definitely worth the $40. If you happen to be there Sunday afternoon, I think at 1 o'clock we're doing our show on Sunday. Come by, check us out. You'll get to see live what we do and how badly we mess up that you never hear on the podcast. And it'll be a lot of fun. I can tell you that. And what are we focusing on?
Well, we're thinking on kind of nerdy geekism, you know, because everyone can say like sci-fi and fantasy, that's geeky. But you know what? There's a lot more things that go into being a geek or a nerd. I mean, video games, fantasy stuff.
So anything Shay Geek.
Pretty much, exactly. That's probably the best way to put it. Anything considered geek couture.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Anything considered geek couture could come up on our list. Both of us have actually had the pleasure of knowing kind of what the other one's going to do. And I have to say, I think we kind of nailed it.
Yeah, from what I've seen so far, I think it's going to be really fun. So now, if you want to reach out to us, let us know what you think about this episode or any other episode. It's really easy to do. There are countless ways you can do it. No matter which way you do it, we will get back in touch with you. The first one is you can send us an email at musicchallengepodcast@gmail.com. Drop us a line. We'll get back to you. Also, you can find us on Facebook in a couple different places. You can find us at POI Network or at Musically Challenged Podcast. Again, either way, drop us a line. We will get back to you. We're also on Twitter. You want to tell us about that, Lou?
Absolutely. On Twitter, we're going to be at MCPodcast17. MC, the letters,
yep.
Podcast17. Get us a note if you want to send us a playlist. 14 different songs, 14 different artists. We have not forgotten about they who have actually sent us the list. We're going to be getting to those in the new year.
Yep, right after EverCon, we'll do our EverCon drop. And then the 2 weeks after that, we have two lists already in the hopper.
Absolutely. In fact, BT sent us one. And then
Hunter McLeod.
That's it. There we go. He's got the other one. So fret not. You guys are on the list. You're on the list. We're going to get to you, we promise. And anybody else you want to send, good, bad, or ugly? Fired off over.
All right. And with that, thank you guys for listening. Have a Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you next week.
You have been listening to a program from the Point of Insanity Network. Visit us at poigamestudio.podbean.com for more shows. Follow us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at POI Game Studio.